Thank you for having me, and thank you all for coming. I know at the end of a conference, we all get choosy about what we go to, so the fact that you all are here I think points out how important this topic is, so thank you for being here. I'd just like to take a second to thank a couple of people, Britt Mold, our MPH student that works with us at Cardozo, who did some of the outcomes data and statistics for us, and then Jessica Wallace, who's our wonderful physician's assistant who actually started this program. This is her baby, but she actually also just had a baby a month ago, so couldn't be here today, so I'm flying solo today. So I'm just going to take a few minutes to tell you about who Unity Healthcare is, about our WECAN program that we have. Are people familiar with WECAN? Is anybody? Okay, so I'll spend one person. I'll spend a little bit of time there. And then talk about how we adapted it to our population, how we've made it sustainable, and then talk a little bit about some of the preliminary outcomes data that we have. We always love showing this slide because Michelle Obama actually came to our health center last year. She chose, or at least someone chose for her, Upper Cardozo as the site to unveil the $800+ million that was dedicated to expanding community health centers in the nation from the Recovery Act. And then when she came, she learned about our WECAN program, and she actually came back and visited us and then invited our patients to the White House twice. So it's really exciting. So Unity Healthcare is a large non-for-profit. We run about 30 clinical sites in the District of Columbia. There are 22 or 23 community health centers, federally qualified health centers, and then we have a smattering of clinics and homeless sites. We have a couple of mobile units, and then we have a health center that's embedded in the district's jail in the Department of Corrections. We're the largest provider, all sites included, of care to uninsured, underinsured, and publicly insured patients in the District of Columbia, and we see about a quarter of the district's residents every year, if you include STD testing, walk-in services, the mobile units. So I work at Upper Cardozo Health Center in Columbia Heights. It's in Ward 1. The district's divided into 8 wards. It was, years ago, historically African-American, kind of middle-class neighborhood, but over the past 15 to 20 years, up until now, it's a really vibrant immigrant community, mostly Latino immigrants, some African, mostly from Ethiopia. And I spend most of my day there. I'm there 3 days a week. I spend most of my time in Spanish. About 90% of my encounters are in Spanish. 5% using LanguageLine for Amharic, and then 5% speaking English, just to give you a sense of whom we serve. And Columbia Heights itself is a neighborhood that's gone under a lot of transition over the past few years. So 10 years ago, it would basically be a dead zone in terms of access to fresh fruits and vegetables through decent supermarkets, a lot of gang violence and things like that. And then about 6 years ago, the district, probably a little longer than that, invested a lot of money in redevelopment. And so there is, there's now sort of upscale senior housing. There are luxury condos mixed in with Section 8 and lower income housing. And we now have right across from the clinic a Target, a Best Buy, a McDonald's, a Staples, things like that. So the neighborhood's undergone a lot of transition, and that's been good for our patients. But I would say this, 10 years ago also there was a string of bodegas, there was a whole underground system of microcredit and exchange of goods, and a lot of that has gone away. So while it's helped the community at large, it's also kind of further marginalized and disenfranchised a lot of our patients, which we sort of learned through this intervention, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. And I'm not going to spend too much time here in interest of time, but this is just to sort of show to you how our patient population, the census tract is specifically where our neighborhood and our clinic sits, just what the level of poverty looks like for our patients. One other point, because a lot of people ask me about this, if you look at the section where it talks about insurance status, the District of Columbia, and for other 36% for the Unity patients, the District of Columbia has a lot of services for uninsured and underinsured, and there's a big safety net insurance for people who are undocumented or don't qualify for Medicaid but still are poor. So a lot of our patients actually have insurance, that 36%. It's just not through Medicaid or Medicare. It's through the safety net insurance. And they reimburse more or less around, along the lines of what Medicaid does. So before I get into what is WECAN, I wanted to talk about why WECAN. So in the District of Columbia, the estimated rate of overweight among children is 23%. So 23% of children in the District of Columbia are at or above the 95th percentile for weight. And back in 2003, a group from Children's National Medical Center published an article in Nature looking at specifically Hispanic groups of kids between 2 and 18 and found that 38% were above the 95th percentile and 22% were what they called at risk for overweight between the 85th and 94th percentile. So that's 60% of Latino kids are above the 85th percentile for weight. So it's pretty significant. So WECAN is a joint effort of actually several institutions, but the two main ones are the NIH and then the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. It's a family-focused intervention, so the intervention is at the level of the family. Parents and kids participate together. The focus is for kids between 5 and 13-year-olds, although you'll see we expanded that a little bit for our patients. And it's supposed to be four sessions. It's split between a kind of educational, didactic portion, and then a exercise experience, and whether that's game-based or taking people to the park, or there's lots of ways that happens. There are many, over 1,200 WECAN sites in the nation. To be a WECAN site, it means that you at least did a four-week or a four-session WECAN intervention. The red dots on the map are the more intensive sites, which we are one. And the curriculum really focuses on four areas: maintaining a healthy weight, eating right, getting active, and reducing screen time. And as you can see, while the largest piece of the pie where it talks about the community sites is for hospitals and clinics, most of the WECAN interventions aren't at clinical sites. They happen in churches, they happen in schools, they happen at Parks and Rec, and so it's not really designed to necessarily have to happen in a clinic. So I just want to talk a little bit about our program, how it started and how we adapted it. It was really the brainchild in its inception of a, I think she was an MPH student who had to do a community-oriented primary care project and decided to implement a WECAN program at our clinic. This was back in spring of 2008. So she got the curriculum, she got the support of the National WECAN office, and she ran a pilot of four sessions. And the patients really loved it. She used the traditional curriculum. There are some materials in Spanish. Some of them we helped her translate. And the response was really overwhelming, and patients loved it and asked to do it again, so we ran another pilot for 4 weeks. And it went really well, and we had, this is actually data for the first 6 months of the program, so for the first 8 weeks, we served 40 patients. For the first 6 months of the program, we served over 100, about 130 participants, fairly evenly split between children, more children than adults, but a lot of parents came, a lot of moms and dads and their children came, and we got a lot of great feedback from the community. And for those, for the early part when we were really doing the traditional WECAN model, we sort of stuck to the curriculum just to talk about it a little bit more. The portion on maintaining a healthy weight focuses a lot on BMI and explaining what that means and getting patients to focus less on pounds and more on BMI. Talks a lot about energy balance equation, energy in equals energy out. It focuses a lot on really simple nutritional interventions, so cutting out soda, reducing juice, changing from whole milk to skim in 1%, just simple interventions that families can do, whether they're on food stamps or enrolled in WIC, or just things that they can do with the resources they have. And then there's an educational portion that's a little higher level around portion size and looking at food labels and interpreting food labels. And there's a lot more to that, but just to give you a flavor of what the educational component looks like. And then there's the physical activity component. And one of the great things about WeCan is that it comes with a set of really active games and activities to do both with families or to split up and do with adults and kids separately. And you can do it right in the clinic or right in the community hall or right in the church basement. We bought or had some donated equipment to start us off with, like the hula hoops. But a lot of the games, you don't really need anything to do. So it's stuff like Red Rover and The Blob, which is a tag game where kids run around. And you don't need that many resources to start a program like this. This is just a sense. Somebody donated their Wii that they weren't using at home. So for sometimes when we split them up, the adults would do Wii. We did some exercise videos. That's a picture of a couple of the participants, but also the medical assistants and providers who participate. So we do, part of the intervention is you get in with the patients and you do the exercise. And I think that's a pretty important piece of the intervention. So after the first 8 weeks, the patients were sort of clamoring for more, and we had to step back and really think about, how are we going to keep doing this? How do we make it sustainable? And are we really addressing the things that we are the social determinants that we think are contributing to the problem in our own neighborhood? And we did a little bit of focus groups with patients, and we talked as providers, and we kind of talked about how we were addressing or could better address these challenges. One of them was the language barrier. So all of our medical assistants, or the ones who participated, were bilingual, Spanish speaking. And the providers also who happened to volunteer all spoke Spanish. So that wasn't so much an issue, but a lot of the WeCan materials needed to be translated, and that's pretty time intensive. We ran into issues, especially with things like food labels, with both low literacy, so the average reading level for Latino immigrants in our clinic is the second grade, and that's in their own language. And also low health literacy, and for those of you who have thought about this, you know, they're slightly different, and if you combine them, it effectively means an even lower literacy level. So we needed to think about that. And there was something about, you know, although we had a lot of buy-in from our medical assistants who we hire from the community, the providers were three white, well-educated women with Spanish as a second language, talking about going to farmers markets, and this is based on the curriculum, and going to the grocery store and spending more money on fruits and vegetables, and we needed to kind of take a step back and think about how we were going to make that more feasible for our patients where they were in the recession and with their income restrictions. We have a lot of single-parent families, or what I call functionally single-parent families, where mom works during the day, dad works at night, they're never in the home together. And it's hard for our patients to get there, and also to carry out our suggestions about taking their kids to the park and things like that. Although the area has gotten a lot safer, there was still a lot of stigma attached to certain places in the neighborhood, and there are still safety issues in many of the parks and things that were potential resources for patients. And then the cultural barriers is a big one. There are actually, so for instance, DC has these wonderful recreation centers that are free for residents in the District of Columbia. And you don't even need an ID. You can just bring a bill in your name. And they really kind of overlook the residency piece if you make the effort to bring something. But because of sort of the history of DC and the history of the neighborhood, it was really perceived that that was a place where the African-American residents, it was sort of a resource for them, and when we talked to our patients and participants, they were just really shy about going. It's right around the corner, it has elliptical machines, it has a basketball court, but it was really an issue getting them there. Okay, so I'm low on time, so I'm gonna rush a little bit. So those are the things we're thinking about. So some of the things we did to sort of make it more real for our patients first of all, we wrote a grant and got about a $25,000 grant from the Department of Public Health. So that was a huge thing in terms of sustainability. And we sort of looked around and sent out a SOS to a bunch of community groups that were doing nutrition interventions in the schools. There was a a group of yoga teachers who were doing volunteer yoga classes at a lot of community places and reached out to them, and we got a tremendous response. So we found a chef who comes in twice a month now and does cooking demonstrations. We partnered with a farm who does a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture Share, and they, for half price, donate a really large box of vegetables, which we give out to patients, and then the chef uses in her cooking demonstrations. We got patients into the grocery stores to do scavenger hunts. We brought them to DC Parks and Recs. We showed them how easy it is to get in. We took them to the free classes that are going on there that they run every week for children and for parents. We got in, you know, dance instructors, yoga. We found one of our providers from Unity who owns a capoeira studio, and she brought us in and offered free classes for patients. And this is just the piece I talked about before, getting patients to the White House, and really just expanded, kind of blew open the program and made it much more about being being the door into a lot of other community resources. The other sustainability piece, and I know I'm short on time, is that we also eventually turned it into a group medical visit, which is a real option for clinics. So instead of it being, instead of using all our grant money to fund, sort of pay for the time to keep the clinic open and everything, we actually bill patients' insurances for the visit. And it's very easy to do. There are lots of models in diabetes, cholesterol, and weight groups, and that has really been financially what's kept our program going. And so now patients come in, they have 3 to 5 minutes with the provider. We ask them some food recall, food history over the past 24 hours. We ask them how many sodas they had yesterday, how much juice, what type of milk are you drinking at home. We record their weight and their height. And then the rest of the time is spent sort of doing the education and the activity. So just going to quickly go through our data. I would say that, and I'll show a little bit of the weight data. We've made the most, or we've had the biggest impact on health behaviors, reducing soda intake, juice, increasing fruit and vegetables, and increasing activity and reducing screen time, which are really the goals of WECAN. And then some nearing significance trends for improving blood pressure. BMI. Both in adults and kids did not change significantly. I would say a couple of things about that. We realized about halfway through the intervention that our medical assistants weren't really accurately recording heights. So sometimes the kids took their shoes off, sometimes they didn't. Kids were shrinking, kids were growing. And so we have a lot. So we had to retrain the MAs about how important it was every time the family came to do that accurately. So I don't really think the BMI data will change much, but we definitely had some issues with dirty data when it came to the BMI. So that's just, sorry, let me go back up quickly. So the adults have lost some weight, especially the more interventions they attend or more classes they attend, and this is just children's weight. Now, obviously, children are growing, so the weight's increasing, and so this, I don't know that this slide is very useful. So in summary, some of the things we learned was even though we really digressed away from WECAN, it's incredibly important when you're asking for grants and trying to communicate with other people to use a curriculum that's already around. And we really feel like that's been a strength for us. And having other sites to talk to, and NIH is very supportive and is always there to send more materials and help us think through challenges, so that's been really important. Kind of getting away sometimes from didactics and more active hands-on learning, expanding our thinking about who could volunteer in the clinic, thinking like a college student, what can we get for free has been very important, and then really listening to patients and just adapting it to their needs and what they were telling us. And that's, thank you. Questions? Do I have time? Yep. Yes, so they, we're just starting to do that. Yeah. And patients, I should say, are recruited. I should have said this, obviously, because it's sort of a captive audience. We recruit them during well child checks and things like that. Yeah.
Two questions. The first is the pre-test and the post-test. Was the post-test done right at the end of the 4 weeks or 8 weeks?
Yeah, so we did, so I should have said, that data is actually over, we do sort of post-tests at certain, because it's become a longitudinal ongoing intervention. So we have patients who have now been with us for 2 years. We started in April 08. So we did a post-test evaluation in, I think it was September. This is data that goes through December 09. So we got away from the sort of four visits, and now it's just ongoing, and patients sort of flowed in and out, and then we looked at how many sessions they had attended, and we do have it broken out by that, but the ends are so small, it's kind of hard to look at. They're not, and when we've, they're not. So there's no cost to the patient, but it's a great, we're using insurance dollars to do this, and we're billing it, we bill it at a low level, but it's still a 1-2 for any clinicians out there. That's the lowest level for a clinician encounter. But it's still reimbursed at a pretty high level. And so we've started, we don't register everybody who comes, just trying, we're taking in what we need and not much more than that. It's not really a money-making endeavor for the clinic. And other sites, when they've called us for kind of technical assistance, it's a real issue for sites that do work on like a sliding scale or a copay, because that means patients have to pay for it when they come. And so we've done more for them, helping them look for grants and things like that. We don't. So we've started doing with the kids the presidential fitness evaluation, and we've thought about looking at that, but we don't. We're talking about it now, and we have a new MPH student, Erica McCloskey, who started it, has since left, who's interested in looking at that and looking at some more measures, but we haven't been measuring it yet. The entire encounter is our group visit. So the time with the provider, where we're really, which allows us to bill, just like as if you were doing a diabetes group, it's just 3 to 5 minutes, and we're there for 2.5 hours total. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah. We have just started doing some recruiting from the neighborhood, but initially they were all patients, most of whom were recruited during well child checks. So there we had a little invitation letter, and you notice that your kid was at the 98th percentile for weight, and you just said, hey, we're starting this program, we have this program, you give the parent the information. I should also say we have a really wonderful clerk who's also a patient at the clinic, whose son is in the program, and who comes to every single session we have and took it upon herself to follow up when we make new referrals and call most of the patients the night before. And this is something she does on her own time because she believes in it, but it was incredibly important to getting us started. So, and I should have put her on there. Her name is Myrna. She's really great. Yeah.
I know that We Can is like an overarching goal for the community, so there's 4 or 5 sub-programs.
Right.
I represent the Catch Kids Club, mm-hmm. which is part of
right.
We Can. We did city tours where we did workshops on the various programs advocated as part of We Can. And I just want to say, somebody asked about evaluation for physical activity. On the Catch Kids Club side of it, if the sites are doing that, there's about 300 physical activities and about 32 nutrition activities and lessons with the Catch Kids Club. There are evaluation components under that piece to see how physically active and what change in nutrition behaviors.
Yeah, we have the minutes of physical activity, and we use a lot of the Catch activities and stuff. So we're using some of the components. I think, when like many interventions at this level, the evaluation piece wasn't thought through enough at the beginning, so we're starting to add it in. Yes, I didn't mention that, but we also use that.
Some people
Yeah, and that's about around, that's one of the nutritional pieces, and it's just helping patients categorize go foods, slow foods, and woe foods to sort of get away from calorie counting and just thinking in terms of nutritional density and calorie density. And it's really effective and easy to understand, and it's great.
Okay.